Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back, and it is now or never. And that debt is fraud. I can cover this, and I can cover this, and I can cover this. There are so many things that the federal government, our government, and your state government, your local government are doing that they have no authority to do. This is where you come to not get entertained. This is where you come to get empowered and informed so that you can take knowledge and exercise that knowledge and ergo exercise power, the power of the people. We're trying to create a movement, folks. Reclaiming the Republic is trying to get people to actually become statesmen, become those like the framers, uniting on these principles. And the principles that are critical are right there in the Constitution, not these ambiguous principles of conservatism or even morality. The principles, when it comes to governing people, the principles of government have something and everything to do with the limited and defined authority delegated. The wise men understood the variances amongst theologies even. I mean, the framers, they all had, and they were all religious men, but they all did not believe in the same doctrines. The Puritans thought everybody else were heathens. They even created, as I like to say, thanks to the Puritans, they actually created a couple of other religions. Because when people started deviating from what they were teaching, they were cast out. And those individuals that were cast out went and created two different religions. Because America was founded, and what they created was not only a free market economy, a free market on Christianity and or righteousness to allow people to, you know, work in accelerating enlightenment. And it seems like we were going down that path, but the same time we were going down that path, Satan struck his blow against humanity with the Charter of the Illuminati. All this happened in 1776. Go do the research. You'll find that three of the most important epochs, the concept of a free market, the wealth of nations, that was written in 1776. The Declaration of Independence, 1776. The Charter of the Illuminati, 1776. Just a coincidence, though, folks. Pay no attention to the clowns behind the curtain. Now, I'm going to get into a concept. I'm going to slowly do this because I don't want to do this today. But Thomas Jefferson talked about how the land in usufruct, the land belonged to the living. And let me spell that out. Usufruct. This was a concept that Jefferson was trying to share with James Madison. And as a matter of fact, it was around the 40th anniversary of the Declaration of Independence. And he really wants to talk about, you know, some of these archaic concepts of how, you know, we create piles of property, and we go down this path of forcing the society to accept the amassing of wealth, empowering more people and more people and more people. And so I don't think Thomas Jefferson was able to crack that nut. And I believe that, you know, we need to probably, you know, if we can get enlightened, maybe we can. I'm not saying I'm here to crack the nut, but it's a concept that actually, it is a new epoch. What he was talking about, it was definitely a new epoch, something that we've never successfully been able to do, because in some ways today, it always gets consumed by the concept of totalitarianism, collectivism, communism. So let me do this before I dive into a lot of other topics. Let me just do this. What I want to do is I want to introduce you to somebody in that can entertain you, because in contradiction to Taylor Swift, in contradiction to all of these evil entertainers out there, there is these little outliers that are actually providing a quality entertainment, something that makes you think, something that actually uplifts you. You know, and actually, the reason I'm bringing this up is because this past week, somebody sent out a comment regarding Crosby, Stills, Nash, and The Cost of Freedom. And as a matter of fact, I think Young was in that too. Find the Cost of Freedom. And when I look at the gentleman that wrote that song and the beautiful, you know, message in that song, the reality is that the money that they made in basically giving lip service to these principles has constantly gone down this path of, because I think that these men are overcome by the dark side, because they don't stand for individual liberty and individual sovereignty. They stand more for, and they're elitist in standing for collectivism. So, you know, as there's people out there that have done that, I think it's time that we actually have an opportunity to find somebody else that we can actually enjoy listening to and making us think, and actually, you know, put some quality products and quality music. So what I'd like to do is I'm going to introduce you to an artist, and his name is Chip Murray. And he's a leader in the freedom movement or the liberty movement. And we work with him and his organization up in Orange County, New York. And so let me just try to get this. I'm going to play the first verse going into the chorus of a song that he's produced. And this is off of, if I can remember correctly, he has the CD Wide Awake. And he's one that always ponders the imponderables, always thinks about, you know, what can we do? How can we, you know, change our course of direction? So without any further delay, let me go ahead and just take a quick bow out while I play the very first stanza. I want you to listen to this, folks, and then say, you know what? This is good music. This is great music. And you can, well, eventually we'll put where you can buy this from, and how you can get your hands on good quality music. And in so doing, you're actually supporting, you know, a good character who's actually using their money to protect your liberties instead of consolidating and amassing riches to take everything from you. Because that's what Taylor Swift stands for. And actually, let me give you another little backstory, because I even had this comment with my wife. I was listening to a song that was Paul and Linda McCartney off of the Ram album. And I, you know, go, wow, you know, this was the first album I ever purchased. And this album created a discourse between me and my father that had basically seared into my mind. At that point in time, I knew too much, and I just wouldn't listen to him, but I realized how right he was, because this was a point in time when he saw that I got that album. He goes, you know what you just did? And I go, no. And he says, you just gave your hard-earned money to a person that's going to use that in doing evil things to basically, you know, send us down this path of destruction. And that's what they're doing. And so even though I was a very little young kid, I mean, when did Ram come out? Or Ram, I think it was like 71, 72, something like that. So I wasn't even ready to, you know, drive yet. But bottom line, getting there, but bottom line, this really impressed upon me, because my instead of, you know, beating me or anything else, my father had this discourse that really taught me how important it is where we put our money and what we elevate, what we choose to elevate in society. And so this is Chip Murray. Just take a quick listen, and I'll be right back after this first stanza. Thank you.
holding on to yesterday, letting go of the things we say, angry words in a raging storm. We used to hug each other and keep each other warm, but that was yesterday. That was yesterday. Broken hearts and shattered dreams, like faded pictures of my favorite thing. We used to talk together all night long, and now we sit in silence waiting for the dawn. Will it come today? God, let it come today, yeah. Side's right and my side's wrong. That ain't no way for us to get along. You say you wanna take us someplace we never been.
Okay, so going into the second stanza, I mean, is this not something that you would be, you know, proud to let your children listen to and let them start thinking again? I mean, this goes back to the kind of music that was coming out 50s, 60s, and 70s. I mean, there was the bop and all of that, but there were really thought-provoking songs out there. There were really songs that actually challenged paradigms and got people to actually start thinking outside the box. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you plenty of advance notice when I'm going to have Chip on. It's not going to be tomorrow. It'll not be, you know, in the week or so. But we're going to select a very special broadcast to actually kind of talk about his music, why he got into this. But folks, just so you know, he's a pastor. And just so you know, he is a leader in the cause of liberty. And he works with what, if you've ever heard of the term black robe regiments, there's, you know, people of the cloth that are actually trying to take a stand on the Constitution. Now, let me ask you this. And one of the things I'm going to dive into with Chip is, you know, if this becomes a really successful career, you know, and we actually ingratiate him with our money in buying this, buying his products, then what? You know, what are you going to do if you actually get this kind of wealth coming in? And I know that, you know, there's always ways to improve your lot in your life. But there's no doubt in my mind, the way Chip has completely focused on the path of liberty, there's no doubt in my mind everything would be consecrated towards that. And so this is why, when I find people like this, you know, I've endorsed, as a matter of fact, I'm not doing this to receive a penny, folks. I am doing this to help you help elevate companies, businesses that actually are good people that are spending their money on the causes of freedom and just trying to stay alive. Now, I know there's lots of people out there, and as we do, and as I meet more and more people that get engaged in this, you know, and as we start learning about these people, I want you, just like our public servants, I want you to hold all of these people accountable. In other words, if we find that we've helped somebody actually rise and, you know, become successful, like Stan Clark of, you know, RadioDustCovers.com. I believe that's who it was, because I'm bad with names. And it was a while ago when I used to do these promotions, or Timber Nation. These companies actually become that successful and they go woke, then we, you know, I expect you to hold them accountable. But if they actually continue to actually help bring forth enlightenment and help bring forth liberty and the fruit of liberty, then they deserve, you know, their place, you know, in our lives. Everybody that is supporting this cause of liberty, individual sovereignty, they are our brothers and sisters, because they are empowering you to be able to make your choice. They're protecting your rights. Now, today, it being not a Feedback Friday, I wanted to actually cover and push some ideas down your ears and into your brain housing group to get you to start thinking about these concepts. One of the concepts that I think we need to really start challenging is the freedom of the press. If I don't repeat these things all the time, but you've heard me say that the freedom of the press does not apply to platforms. The freedom of the press, when you go into any state and how they define the freedom of the press, the freedom of the press is you. The right for you to say what you want to say. If you want to report, you have the right to protect your sources, to bring information forward. But when a medium or a platform like Facebook decides that what you're saying is against, you know, their standards, then you have the responsibility to actually go to your state legislatures and say, Facebook has denied me my right of freedom of the press. They can't create, they may be a private entity, but they cannot enforce rules or laws that take away your privileges and immunities. Oh, hold on here. They're private. They can do that. No, they're not private. They are registered to operate in every state. If not, then those states actually need to go after them and say, you can't operate in our state, Facebook, because they make money in every state. Every online entity should be registered in every state, because if you have access to them from your state and they're not registered, they should be, especially if they're making money. Because the Constitution, the beautiful thing, because you're going to hear me say how great the 14th Amendment is. The 14th Amendment opens the door to allow your state to actually protect you, because no state shall make or enforce any law. So if Facebook has a rule like community standards and they want to enforce that, then your state can actually stand up and say, Facebook, these are citizens of the United States. And they have a right to be able to publish anything they want. You have an open forum. You can't create rules to silence them. Either you charge people to keep yourself secret as a secret organization. But if you're going to be open and allow anybody and everybody in there, then that's it. Because what you're going to force Facebook and all these other social media businesses, and actually there's another one out there called Gab. I'm thinking about actually interviewing the founder and the proprietor for Gab. It's like Facebook, and it's kind of like, what's the other one? MeWe. I think that MeWe was another one that was a counter to Facebook, where real freedom reigns. And I mean, really, freedom reigns. But the fact is this, folks, that the freedom of the press means that you have the right to publish anything you want. However, you can be held liable for anything that was false, salacious, or what have you. And I don't think that many of the problems that Facebook, when Facebook says this is false and they take it down, the state should be able to come in and say, prove how that was false. And you know what? When every state starts bogging down Facebook, watch what happens to Zuckerberg and his billions. As a matter of fact, when we start realizing and actualizing the immensity of the money that they're making because we're doing nothing about it. By the way, any click that occurs on your computer was a financial transaction where somebody made money. That happened in your state. You physically are sitting in a state where you made that transaction happen. It didn't happen on the moon. It didn't happen out somewhere in the universe. It happened right there on your computer because you made a decision to click on something. Now, folks, don't click on crap. Don't click on crap engines and social media and so forth unless you really understand where you're clicking, or at least have something to protect you. Because this is these when you click on things, this is where you become vulnerable. And especially in Facebook and social media, there's these hackers that actually create these little scripts that when you click on that, what it does is it runs the script on your computer and exposes your credentials and other things to those people that you just clicked on. So please, you know, I never provide links unless I know you and you can be assured that you can trust me. But when I actually throw out with anybody, I will just basically say, hey, www, and I spell out dot with spaces, reclaimingtherepublic.org, so that you all you have to do is then you piece together and go to that site instead of clicking on a link. When you click on a link, there could be a nefarious script. It's the same thing with some PDFs or when you launch a Word document. So be very careful out there. Be smart. Don't trust anybody. Anyway, so the press, the freedom of the press is one thing to be able to say, hey, you know, you can say anything, but we are failing to hold accountable those people who actually use it as a privilege to be able to misinform us. We need to start holding the news and, as a matter of fact, our entertainment accountable. You know, when somebody comes out and starts wants to lecture you on politics and they want to start telling you something that's misinformation, then you have the right to actually go after them for actually making a public statement of misinformation, whether it's climate change, global. I mean, why is Al Gore able to walk around and talk? This man has tried to invoke fear. This man has lied to the people. And as a matter of fact, he ought to be held accountable to his lies. Remember, we were all going to be dead by now. And where are the truths? So bottom line, we fail to hold people accountable. That's the real problem. When evil can get away with doing and saying anything that they want and not be held accountable, then we have a real problem. So the weather, news, climatologists, they're all seeking greater and greater relevance. And when I look, you know, this is actually like, why is it that the news or the weather people are becoming evangelicals on the leftist side? In other words, they're the ones getting the jobs. If you want to promote leftism and global communism through climatology, then there you go. But this all started thanks to that huckster, Al Gore, who should be the first charged as a propaganda alarmist who has been spinning lies to get people to surrender their liberties, because that's all he's been doing. Now, I want to change, you know, shift gears real quick, because if you hadn't heard in the news, there's an injunction against a Tennessee law that that was shutting down or banning abortions. Folks, that is an unconstitutional injunction. If you know anybody in Tennessee and you know legislators in Tennessee that they don't know what to do, then we need to have a talk. Give them my contact information. We will have a forum and we will actually be able to take and shut the courts down. The courts do not have jurisdiction over this matter. Just it's this simple, folks. It's not in the U.S. Constitution, nor is it in the Constitution of Tennessee. Therefore, it is not an issue for the state court. This is an issue for common law court, possibly, but not the state court. When the state actually creates a law that says they want to ban this activity, and it is not an enumeration within the Tennessee case, then technically, hate to say this, folks, but technically that enumeration or that law that's not based upon an enumeration, unless it is something in line with, and I believe Tennessee does have this because many states do, about protecting life. Can they define life? Yeah, absolutely. They can define life right there in the womb, and they can actually use that to actually create that law. But the courts creating an injunction say they can't do that. There's no enumeration that empowers the courts or empowers people to get abortions. We'll be right back. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. Okay, so just to get back to this issue in Tennessee, I know good legislators in many states, Tony Randolph over in South Dakota. You know, he's just tied. You know, he just doesn't know what to do. He's just so frustrated that he can't, you know, shut down abortion. Actually, you can, folks. If it is not something that's enumerated, the right to expunge life, if that's not enumerated in the Constitution, and in your state constitution, you actually say that, you know, the government's role is to preserve life, then you can actually create laws that actually outlaw abortion. Now, what'll end up happening is, and as a matter of fact, this becomes an awakening of our hybrid constitutional republic, because you're going to find places within the states, as we actually start empowering the counties and restoring the Republican form of government, it's going to be unfortunate that you're actually going to find places in the state, because you're going to create a very limited state government, like the federal government. It's a services government. Your state government is a general government, just like the federal government. And its job is to preserve the liberties and the sovereignty of the counties, the counties being the government of the people of their vicinage, and the counties will have the power to decide whether they want to be able to do those things that within that state constitution you want to strip it down to being very specific to the few services that you want it to administer, and that's it. Like, you know, the warfare, or I should say national security for the national government. Now, the state, we don't need to do that, because that's the national government's job, the federal job, the general government's job. So anyway, as we kind of sit and talk about these things, we want to also bring up many other issues. And so the next issue that I've got to bring up is your Fourth Amendment right, because this is something that nobody gets. Folks, this is what the Fourth Amendment says. The right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects. Now, folks, this was in the 1700s, before we even had computers. And this clearly covers anything and everything. Your persons, your house, your papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated. The Fourth Amendment was originally written to protect the people from the federal government, because the Bill of Rights were rights that were administered that created negative powers. So, in other words, the federal government could not violate this right. How is it that this right had been applied to you at the state level? No, it's not the Comity Clause. It is the 14th Amendment. The 14th Amendment versus the Comity Clause were those common rights that were basically administered by the states. Means that one state, you know, if you got this protection of driving at the age of 12, then you, as a 12-year-old, you can go to another state and you should be able, you can drive as a 12-year-old while you're visiting that state. because they have to recognize the rights of the citizens from another state. Now, the 12-year-old problem the 12-year-old example is a problem. And I say this because a state would have to actually make that person, that 12-year-old, a citizen so that they would have those rights. And a other state would basically then have a real problem of saying, okay, now we've got a U.S. citizen at the age of 12. Technically, the United States government, or I should say the general government of the federal government, they have the standards of citizenship. They establish a uniform rule of naturalization and what age that is. And so, you know, we have to look to that. As a matter of fact, they even have created a standard of service where you have to be 17 years of age of service. Now, in talking about this, this is where we actually go down this path of, well, at what point in time should a person be able to vote? Right now, it's 18. Well, the government has made it 17. The federal government's made it 17. I think that that's a travesty. I honestly think that it should be 18 or when you are self-sufficient. In other words, if you're going to be living in your parents' home and you're pursuing academia, then I believe that we should actually maintain an unfettered, you know, responsibility upon the students or people that are in the academic area. In other words, because when we look at the exclusions of draft and so forth, how many people were excluded because that was the paradigm? At this point in time, you're immersed and engaged and committed to doing this. And those people were able to avoid their draft and responsibilities and so forth. Now that things have changed a little bit where, shoot, you can get a, you know, you can actually go get your, what is that, a student loan and become a permanent, you know, help me out here, a permanent student, because I had a cousin that was that way. I think he was a student into his 40s and received lots of degrees, but anyway, and as a doctor and so forth. But anyway, the point is this, is that when you're in that student status, you can't vote. You don't have a right to vote. You don't have a right to just go out there and vote. I think that that's when we look at the amendment for the age of 18, that it becomes a lock. I don't think so. I think that, you know, if you're in an academic realm, I believe that you should be unfettered with the world, you know, of politics and all those other things. Not that you don't get affected by it, but bottom line, this is a way that we've created this little this bubble around those who are in the process of learning. So in other words, you either have to be, you know, self-sufficient, because if you're living with your parents, you shouldn't be able to vote. As a matter of fact, the framers didn't let anybody vote unless you own property. But if you're out and you're self-sufficient, in other words, you're out and you're engaged in society, and I know this would be harder to frame, but the 26th Amendment. That amendment really needs to be reframed to change from 18 years old and actually make it impossible that you can't actually provide, you know, military service until you've at least finished school. The fact that we allow kids to drop out at age 17 to join, then maybe that should be, if you're in the military at age 17, then okay. But I think it's a travesty. I honestly think that, well, let's actually, because we're going to get into education here. We're going to actually attack education and the system itself. But if you are in pursuit, because I don't think you need to be in education at age 18. I think we can actually lower the age. But the current paradigm is that you are, that we have a national education system. And based on that, you know, and based on the ideals and paradigms that they've tried to cast in this atrocious system that they've inflicted upon us, then this is what we need to do. But I honestly think we need to go down another way. But anyway, getting back to the Fourth Amendment. This is an initial protection from the federal government. The 14th Amendment laid this protection onto the governments within the state. In other words, when it says no state shall make or enforce any law, that doesn't mean your state government can't. That also means that any government or any governing agency. And so let me ask you this. When you create a corporation, is a corporation capable of governing? Absolutely it is. As a matter of fact, it is required by the state to provide governing documents. Who are your leaders? Blah, blah, blah. And so when we look at businesses or corporations that are registered with the state, and I think we really need to look at how we sever and separate this, because, and this goes down to the 16th Amendment with income and so forth, because back in the 16th Amendment days, people's businesses, their home businesses, were not necessarily registered with the state. I mean, you had a lot of chickens and you sold eggs. You were not registered with the state to have to, you know, report that income. Or I should say, you may have had to report income via sales tax or what have you. I have no idea how all of that went down, but I do know that they didn't have all of the home businesses that were where families were growing things or doing things. And it was kind of, this is what we call, there's a word for it. It's like a garage or, you know, a shade tree mechanic or, you know, there's a word for it. And I know somebody's going to get it to me through text or what have you when you hear me struggling on this. But there's a technical word for allowing the small businesses where you don't have to be governed, you know, and or registered as a major corporation, where you can actually sell jams and those types of things. And so a lot of states allow small businesses to actually function, or people to function, as long as you're not producing too much. Because once you get to a scale of production of a certain size, then they say, okay, you're no longer a hobby and, you know, making money from doing a hobby affair. You're actually this is a legitimate big business. And so when we look at these protections, again, these corporations that are registered with the state, can they actually violate your right? So let's look at it this way. And when we start peeling the onion, I think we can start realizing how businesses and corporations, global corporations, are actually doing evil deeds for governments. When we look at Microsoft, when we look at Google, when we look at the symbiotic relationship between Amazon and all of these different agencies, how they are reporting. And let's look at the spirit of this. Again, the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, and effects against unreasonable searches, seizures, shall not be violated. What is the spirit of that? That's actually not even speaking to government. It is basically saying the right of the people from Mrs. Kravitz across the neighbor, or, you know, the neighbor across the street. That's an old Bewitched for those who want to get the sub-reference. So when we actually have nosy neighbors that are spying on us and telling people about that information, we should be able to actually go and sanction that person, and that there should be a penalty for somebody blabbing whatever it is you're doing. Because you have a right to be secure in your persons. Does this not apply in every aspect to your how you function and what you do? Now, it's one thing if it is something visible from the street. It's one thing if it's something that, you know, is basically come out. It's another thing when somebody is actually eavesdropping, spying, and using technology to obtain information about you. That's what this is protecting you. So there are people that it would not be good if somebody was doing something that would be bad behavior, like you're living in an apartment and you bring in a whole bunch of pigs and you have a pig farm in your apartment on the 11th floor in New York City. And you've got, you know, maybe 70 pigs throughout this house. And I mean, just imagine that, folks, the health problems and so forth. That right there, the people hear a lot of pigs, they hear a lot of animal noise. Well, you don't, at that point in time, because it's basically emanating from the apartment, they don't necessarily need to say they want to spy on you. It becomes probable cause. We start understanding the real meaning of probable cause and how they actually started using that for the open fields doctrine and these other things. Absolutely not. When we really look at how they have bent the law in so many different ways to exploit it in being able to obtain information about you, because they have created a hostile environment. Our government has created a hostile environment where they don't trust their citizens. So this is one of the reasons why in the First Amendment petitions that we actually have a disclosure sheet to help you understand that you have a right to be secure in your person. You may sign and support a petition, but government doesn't need to know that. They can't collect the information to say, yeah, did you sign this? We want you to understand that the Fourth Amendment is being shredded and ground in so many different ways that you don't have any rights anymore right now. When Microsoft basically takes your information and shares that, all of these big tech companies, you're shopping. When you go to Safeway, Albertsons, or Kroger's, or whoever, when you're going there and they're basically keeping track of everything you buy and collecting data on you, that is illegal. So you have a right to basically be secure in your persons. It's one thing that you're out there, and it's one thing that they may actually be able, for marketing purposes, be able to garner information without actually keeping track of who you are. But when it becomes information where your name is associated and is handed over to government, they have become a willing conspiracy. That creates a conspiracy between the corporations and government. And the spirit of this concept of the right of the people to be secure in their persons is a concept that is fundamental even in the realm of God. Because even back then, even under theocracies, it was wrong for preachers, ministers, or what have you, to do inquisitions, to come in and seize your stuff. That was recognized as a wrong act. It violates the inalienable rights of the individual. So when we start looking at how we need to start applying this and how to apply this to private citizens, I'm here to tell you folks that we have the ability by using the Fourth Amendment right to actually start going after Facebook, social media, and all of these corporations, even when they want to pass a law that says you have to have immunizations, like the education system, demanding that you tell them what type of immunizations you've had. Now, as a person and knowing people, that are really, really wound tight. And there are people out there, folks, that have immune problems. In other words, if you have an immune problem, you go to school and you could die if you're exposed to certain things because you have an immune deficiency, then those people shouldn't be in that school. But this becomes another problem with school itself. Why is it that we're still using academy forms of school and education? Why is it that we're allowing the education system to get away with indoctrinating our children? I honestly believe, who has the ultimate responsibility over that child and preparing that child to be ready to become an adult in contributing to society? That's right, the folks, the parents, the family, maybe the community, but not government. Not the state, definitely not the federal. And so maybe the counties, maybe if that's what you want, because that's the level of government where you would basically delegate those types of powers, but that would be it. When we really start looking at the education system and how the education system has been a part of our, I'll call it cultural engineering, because that's what I'm going to get into next. We have this level of cultural engineering that has been weaponized. Our government has weaponized itself and using all sorts of things that they have no authority to do in attacking us and basically destroying us. And one would say, well, they're not real. But when you look at how everything and the interplay of what they're doing Absolutely. That is their strategy. So when we start talking about, you know, whether people should be able to, you know, spy on each other, corporations and so forth, that's all fine and good. That is a paradigm that we need to start challenging, and we need to start massaging, as I would say, a collective of the people down at the lowest level to start really saying, we do have these inalienable rights and we need to start protecting them. But let's actually shift over to this engineering and the source of this engineering. The source of engineering, cultural engineering, actually came back way back from Plato's Republic. Plato actually wrote a book about how to create a statist government and how it would actually interact with very specific functions in society to control society so that society would be better, so that they could actually, through engineering and design and their plans or machinations, be able to create a super society with super intellectual people, with super physical abilities and so forth. The whole concept is a very perverted concept where the state actually controls everything. And in this concept, the state actually has to control the family. That is the essence of Plato's Republic, as well as the Communist Manifesto by Engels and Marx. Now, when we actually started, you know, moving forward, all sorts of evil started really getting unleashed. And I know you've heard of the Cloward-Piven strategy. And the Cloward-Piven strategy is a political strategy that was outlined in 1966 by American sociologists. And this was their study of sociology. You know, when people started really understanding how to start engineering people, these two political activists, Cloward and Piven, actually laid down in a book how to do this. And what I want to focus on is just one little facet of cultural engineering, because what I can see right now, there's probably more than three sides, but I can definitely see how there are three sides to this cultural engineering. The first is the education system and its wake of destruction, because what they teach is entitlement in the education system. They teach that nobody can, you know, you have a right to not ever be offended, that nobody can hurt your feelings, that you're entitled to be protected, and that you're going to be protected, and that teaches children that government must and will protect you, and you have to demand government to protect you, protect your feelings, so you feel good all the time. In other words, it is a void of bitter. I mean, if you live a life of sweet, all of a sudden you no longer recognize that sweet is sweet anymore, because you've never tasted bitter. The only reason we appreciate the sweet is because of the bitter. And so, but they're trying to create a world. It's when we look at negative and positive, this balance, right? You have to have a balance of positive and negative. In other words, if you live a life with no negative, then you don't have a balance, and you can really get screwed up with just positives in your life. And so the profound wisdom of our divine creator ensured life would be filled with balance, positives and negatives, good and bad. And it is perverse to the creation of mankind and the universe to try to void negative and only have positive. The atoms would not function without the negative ions. Matter would just cease to exist the way it is required in the nature of the atom, the nuclear design. So when we really start looking at what the education system is doing, it is trying to basically get the kids to create complete dominance of positive and a void of negative. And that is done by entitlement. This is why when we see the byproducts of entitlement, this is why homelessness and addictive behavior is through the roof. A continuance of entitlement is literally just being this moral turpitude in our political arena, because when we see how the children are being told and hoodwinked, you need to vote for communism. You need to vote for communism. Now, that's not what they're saying. They're saying you need to vote for those who are going to give you the entitlements, those who are going to protect you, those who do these things. Serving the corporate form of government is another way of continuing this concept of entitlement. Because when you're being served by the corporate government, that means that your welfare is being taken care of, your housing, all of these things are entitlements. And those people who get destroyed by the addictive path of drugs, whether it be drugs, alcohol, maybe it's gambling, what have you, don't worry. Because what they're doing, and I said this before, when you see a government removing the consequences of sin, the negative of life, then it is creating a pure evil of existence. When we actually have government spending money to actually heal STDs, STDs are a consequence. Are we better off by eliminating them? No, we're better off by changing our behavior. Because by using discipline, we elevate ourselves. But by using taxpayers' money, and we actually alleviate, oh, we got a cure for that. That means all that does is it enables you to be able to go out and do things that you shouldn't be doing because of the moral turpitude and the dangers of that. And, oh, well, that's okay, because if you get AIDS, they've got a cure for that now. Not that they do, but that's what they're working on. It is all about enabling you to continually do bad things, taking away the consequences of good. This is the darkest. There's never been a society that has come to this point. I mean, look at the Chinese organ harvesting. That right there is taking away the consequences of bad behavior. Oh, you destroyed your liver, David Crosby. Okay, well, we'll get you a new one. Because you've been such a good servant to us with social credits, all of these types of things. So the continuance of entitlement is one of the big parts of the education system, because they teach you how to maintain and help grow the entitlement system and the entitlement paradigm. The second prong, or the second part of cultural, I'll call it cultural engineering, is by opening our borders and allowing this invasion to occur. And the consequences that come from that are just overwhelming. The importation of drugs, not to mention the importation of combatants coming in here with the ability to get organized and actually attack us. And the importation of disease. And in tandem to the importation, or I should say allowing these people to just migrate over, there's even a worse and more nefarious actions by our federal government. You exercising powers that they don't have by the importation directly of what we would call the invasion, but instead we call it a refugee program, where they're taking people of literally opposing cultures and bringing them into. So tell me about Springfield. Tell me about Detroit. Tell me about these areas where they've imported so many people that have been contrary and contradictory towards our nature as a society of liberty. And anyway, I'll get back into this. I'll kind of re-catch up when we do this again. But I want you to understand that they are waging warfare with cultural engineering and out to destroy us. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, process. This is what is referred to as Republic Review. Please read my argument for Republic Review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.